30 years, a new word has appeared in our language which strikes fear into the hearts of people, and it's the word burnout. Burnout, of course, refers to that physical and emotional crash which can be caused by stress. And because we live in a high-stress world these days, more and more people are struggling with how to cope. Burnout, by the way, can be interpreted in different ways. There's burnouts that young people do. They do donuts in their cars. And there's the kind of burnout that... The language is a funny beast, I know. But what we're doing this morning is we're talking about this question of the stress in life which so often interferes with our relationship with God. We live in a world today where there's a great pressure upon us to perform. People around us have all sorts of expectations of us, and we feel a great need to try and live up to those expectations, and we put pressure on ourselves to do so. We keep trying to keep up with everybody else, what they're doing. And then, of course, at work, there is pressure placed upon us to keep on studying and to keep upgrading our qualifications so that we can keep up with the demands of our careers. And then, of course, there's also the general business of life, whether it be in the family, in the church, a social life. It's the nights out, it's the weekends, it's all the demands of life piled in on top of each other, accumulating to the point where we just start to cave in. And sooner or later, something has to give. And sometimes it's a physical thing, but often it's a mental or an emotional thing. Sometimes even a spiritual thing, and people burn out. Some years ago, a guy called Charles Hummel wrote a book called The Tyranny of the Urgent. And in this book, he facetiously suggested that what we really need is we need a 36-hour day. And then he proceeded to show that it would only be a matter of time before all the same problems would occur. 36 hours wouldn't have been enough hours in a day for us to be able to do everything that we needed to do. The real dilemma, of course, is not the amount of time that we've got, but it's what we do with that time. It's the priorities and how we manage that time. And God's purpose for each one of us is that we use the time that he's given us in such a way that we, yes, are productive in the way that we live our lives, but also that we give God the place that he deserves in the midst of it all. And this brings us to the question of Mary and Martha, or Martha and Mary, who were sisters. They lived with their brother Lazarus in a little town called Bethany, which was about 3 kilometres outside of Jerusalem. And it tells us that the home that they lived in was actually owned by Martha. Maybe she was the older sister. Perhaps she was a widow. We get the impression as we read about Martha and Mary and Lazarus that they were reasonably well off. They might have actually even been quite wealthy. They were certainly able to offer hospitality to Jesus and to his disciples on a regular basis whenever they were down in the region of Jerusalem. And we know from the bottle of perfume that Mary had stashed away there that she was obviously able to afford a fairly expensive drop, which she was able to use later on to bless Jesus. But Jesus obviously had a very close relationship with this family, and he enjoyed their hospitality, and quite clearly they were very devoted to him and to his disciples. But when we read the accounts of Martha and Mary, we discover that these two sisters actually had quite different personalities. Perhaps Martha, if we were kind of typing her these days, we would say she was probably a type A personality. She was an organised person. She was a fairly forceful person. And she was a doer. She liked a bit of action, getting things done. Mary, on the other hand, was probably a type B. She was one of those more relaxed types. It used to frustrate her sister Martha. In any case, the first scenario that we're going to look at this morning brings out this, if you like, a clash of priorities between these two sisters. And we get a little peek into their domestic life, and we see the way that their priorities, their different priorities, played themselves out in this domestic scene that is recorded for us in Luke chapter 10. Let me read again those verses that Mark read to us a few moments ago. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you're worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." Martha was stressed. You can imagine the scene there. "Here I am, slaving my heart out in the kitchen, and look at her. A useless, good-for-nothing sister of mine. For goodness sake, Jesus, tell her to get off her tail and come and help me. Can't you see how much work I've got to do? I've got to feed all these people, and I'm doing it all on my own." Now, I've got to confess this morning that I can identify with Martha. Are there anybody else here who can identify with Martha? Yeah, I see lots of hands going up there. I'm by nature a bit task-oriented. I like to be busy. I don't know whether you would call me an adrenaline junkie, but, you know, a little bit of adrenaline never hurt anybody, all right? There are times when it actually annoys me when others aren't doing more to help. I try not to show it. I've worked very hard to sort of keep that kind of pretty private to myself. But in my heart of hearts, I'm feeling a little bit uptight when I'm working hard and others are not. And Martha was like that. And she was cranky with Mary. But more than that, she was actually cranky with Jesus, if you look carefully. "Lord, don't you care? Tell her to help me." It's not a good space to be in when you're telling the Lord what to do. And yet, in a sense, you could say, here she was lecturing God about how to manage her circumstances. That's what she's doing. But Martha didn't just have a problem with Mary and with Jesus. She actually had a problem with herself. Look at verse 40. It tells us there that she was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. Martha was distracted. The Greek literally means she was drawn away. Drawn away in her focus upon what was happening there in the kitchen. And she'd forgotten about the real significance of her hospitality, which was to entertain Jesus and the disciples. She was meant to be able to enjoy having this honoured guest in her home, but she was distracted. And then verse 41, it tells us that she was worried and upset. Jesus said to her, "Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset about many things." And in the process, welling up with inside her was anger and frustration. And I imagine all sorts of unpleasant thoughts were going through her mind about those people who were sitting out there in the guest room. And you know, stress does that to you. It messes with the way that we see things. It distorts our priorities. We only see things from our perspective. We start making harsh and unfair judgments about other people. We become critical and bitter and even jealous of other people. We feel sorry for ourselves. And sometimes we do what Martha did here, and we actually blame God for it. It's your fault. It's your fault, God, that I am in this situation, that I'm in these circumstances that I find myself in. And because of this, the thought that our priorities might be wrong doesn't even enter into our thinking, because we're so consumed with ourselves and our circumstances. We get so caught up in our busyness and perhaps our pride that we lose our perspective. We lose our sense of priorities. And notice how Jesus responded to Martha here. You're worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Jesus didn't rebuke Martha for being busy. He didn't criticize her work in the kitchen. But in a very gentle way, he corrected her wrong thinking. He challenged her priorities. Let's be fair to Martha. She meant well. And I think she really did appreciate having Jesus there. She appreciated the opportunity to use her gift of hospitality in this way. And Jesus knew that. But he also wanted Martha to be able to enjoy the visit. He wanted her to be able to appreciate this opportunity that they had to be together without all that pent-up frustration and stress. And he wanted her to see that she was actually missing out on something which would be special for her, some really good quality time with Jesus. What was the one thing, Jesus said, that was most needed here? It was to spend time with Jesus. Only one thing is needed. Indeed, only one. And this is where priorities become so important to those of us who live busy lives. So important for us to get our priorities straight. A busy life can be a very barren life if we're not careful. Can I just say that again? A busy life can be a very barren life if we're not careful. Life can become so stretched. We start to think that we're indispensable. Spiritually, we become exhausted. We lose touch with Jesus. And eventually, we burn out. That's the end result. We need to be more like Mary and less like Martha. And what does Jesus say about Mary? Mary has chosen what is better. Mary has chosen what is better. In those days, for a woman to be able to sit with men was quite an unusual thing. The rabbis forbade it. Women could not be in the room discussing issues of importance with other men. Jesus obviously didn't have a problem. He valued women highly. For him, it was a joy to have Mary in the room there, involved in the discussion that was taking place there that evening. Mary was in there listening at Jesus' feet, we are told. Where do we hear from Jesus today? Well, Grace even mentioned this in her talk with the kids this morning. Well, we hear from Jesus when we read our Bibles, friends. We hear from Jesus when we spend time in prayer, communicating with him. We hear from Jesus when we involve ourselves in Christian fellowship. And God is able to use comments by our Christian brothers and sisters to encourage us, to point us more clearly to the Lord and what he would say to us in our lives. And yet, you know what, when we're busy, when we're stressed, The first thing that usually goes is our quiet time, isn't it? Our time with God. Yes, when that happens, we can so easily convince ourselves that our busyness is worthwhile. And maybe it's only going to be for a season, not going to last all that long. And yet, days go into weeks, which go into months, and sometimes go into years. And spiritually, we start to dry up as we lose contact with the Lord. What happens is that we become distracted, just like Martha became distracted from what was most important. We start to lose perspective on spiritual things. We become worried and upset. Little things start to niggle us and drive a wedge into our relationship with other people. And friends, if that is you this morning, in the busyness of your life, you are becoming distracted. You're becoming worried. You're becoming upset. Let me ask you the question. Are you regularly spending quality time with the Lord? Are you choosing what is better? We should never despise the value of a disciplined quiet time, friends. We need to be having regular contact with the Lord. And I think if your natural tendency is to be a busy person, if that's what your life normally looks like, then can I suggest that you have to work really hard sometimes to make sure you give Jesus the place in your life that he really deserves. It needs to be a priority. If Martha was a type A person, Jesus didn't blame her for that. That was the personality that he gave to her when he created her. She was made to be a type A. But Jesus also wanted to protect her from missing out on the joy and the refreshment that comes with having fellowship with himself. That's what he really wanted. Choose what is better, Martha. That's what Jesus was saying to her that day. And I can hear Jesus saying those words to me this morning. Choose what is better, Murray. And maybe you could put your name in there as well too. Choose what is better. I think that's the first word that comes to us about priorities when we look at Mary and Martha this morning, friends. But there's a second scenario that I want us to look at this morning before we finish. And it comes from that second passage that Mark read for us earlier on. It refers to an incident that occurred 6 nights before the crucifixion of Jesus. Again, it was at Bethany. This time it was in the home of Simon the leper. We can assume, I think quite confidently, that Jesus had healed Simon the leper sometime before. There is even a suggestion that Simon may have actually been the father of Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. It's just a theory. There isn't a lot of support for it. But the understanding would be that because he was a leper, he wasn't allowed to live with his children. He had to live separately. And now that he was healed, he was able to throw a party in honour of Jesus for healing him and healing his son Lazarus. Again, just a theory, don't get too carried away with it. But it's just a nice thought, isn't it? And here he is, Simon, hosting this dinner for Jesus and his disciples. And Mary and Martha and Lazarus are there. And Mary, of course, is in the kitchen where she normally is, getting involved in the service there. And again, true to form, Martha is out there listening in on the conversation that was taking place. Sorry, Mary's in there listening in on the conversation between Jesus and his disciples. Let's quickly read again these words from John 12. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honour. Martha served, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. Once again, the discussion is about priorities. This time, let's call it priorities in worship. What Mary did that day was an extraordinary expression of worship and of love for Jesus. If we could describe the scene, you've got a room with a table, a low table in the centre, and you have Jesus and the disciples and Lazarus would have been lying on the floor on one side, propped on an elbow, with their heads pointing towards the table where the food was, and they would have been feeding themselves with the free hand that they had. Their legs would have been pointing away from the table. And this was the moment that Mary chose to break open this alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, 500 to 600 mils of it. Nard, which is what this perfume was called, came from the Himalayas in the northern part of India. It was extremely expensive. In fact, we're told it was worth a year's wages. That's a lot of perfume. Let's just say $50,000 worth today's value. And that's what Mary had kept aside. It tells us in the Matthew and Mark accounts of this incident that not only did she anoint Jesus' feet, but she also anointed Jesus' head. But I guess if you've got 500 or 600 mils of this highly expensive perfume, she would have been able to probably drip it on his head and on his body and also on his feet. Only slaves ever attended to people's feet, nobody else. And then she did something even more shocking. She used her hair, she let down her hair and used her hair to actually wipe the feet of Jesus. You can imagine what that would have done to the conversation that was taking place that evening. This was a real conversation stopper. And they would have been stunned for a moment. And then it tells us in John's account here that Judas was the one who spoke up. What a waste. How extravagant. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor or to some other needy cause? Surely, Jesus, there's something wrong here. You've got to say something. And you can kind of imagine the tut-tutting that would have been going on there in the conversation. It tells us in the other accounts that it wasn't just Judas, but all the other disciples were indignant. And once again, as I think about this story, I have to confess that I can understand why the disciples were indignant. If I'd been there, I'm pretty sure that I would have been one of those disciples. I hate waste. I'm careful with money. And if I've got some spare money going around, I'm thinking about missions. I'm thinking about the church budget. I'm thinking about maybe another compassion child. I'm thinking about persecuted Christians and the other mission-related organisations that I'm interested in. So how does Jesus handle this situation? Look at verses 7 and 8 again. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. I think that Mary knew something that the disciples didn't know about Jesus. She was thinking about Jesus' death. She knew that very soon Jesus was going to die. And she wanted to take that one last opportunity to express her love and her devotion and her worship of Jesus before he died. Some people think that this was just like a random, a spontaneous moment in her life. I don't think so. I think she deliberately took her alabaster bottle of perfume with her that evening as she went to Simon's place. And she intentionally took this opportunity. She'd thought about it, and she wanted to take this opportunity to declare her faith in Jesus one last time. This was a gesture of incredible extravagance and sacrifice and generosity. No expense was too great for her to spare that evening. And what Jesus said that evening, and these words are actually recorded in Matthew 26, in the Matthew account. Just read that verse 10 there. Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me." That's how Jesus summed it up. She's done a beautiful thing to me. Notice that Jesus didn't say that caring for the poor isn't important. He didn't say that at all. Caring for the poor is important. He said that there's always going to be poor people for you to look after. You're not going to have many more opportunities, however, to be able to express your love and your devotion to me in this way. And what Mary did that evening really touched the heart of Jesus. She's done something very beautiful for me. Notice she didn't just measure out 50 mils of the precious perfume, which itself would have been quite a significant amount of perfume. No, she poured out the whole lot, 500 to 600 mils. And friends, this is the sort of worship that God desires. And this is the kind of worship I think that many of us struggle to fully comprehend. It's a worship that doesn't count the cost. I hear those words of Jesus, "Don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. You know, when you're giving, be generous." It's a worship that doesn't care what other people are thinking. It's a worship that is heartfelt and generous and is motivated by a deep love for the Lord. And you know, every time I read this story, I feel rebuked in my own heart, because this is not the way that I am naturally. I'm one of these people who tends to hold back. And I think what Jesus is saying here is let go. Don't hold back. Let go. Love me for who I am. Worship me for what I've done. Give me the best that you've got. Pour it out on the altar of sacrifice. Your possessions, your money, your marriage, your family, your career, your gifts, your abilities, pour them out. Lay them on the altar of sacrifice. Before you go out to serve the poor and the needy in this world, give yourself to me. That's the priority. I think that's what Jesus is saying here. And Mary understood that. She wanted to give herself utterly and totally and completely to Jesus, first of all. Everything else is secondary to that. The disciples hadn't really understood that, but she did. And I wonder this morning, friends, do we understand that? Are we so committed to loving and serving the Lord that we're prepared to give ourselves the very best that we've got up front? I think Mary's case, she had in view the death of Jesus, maybe even the cross itself. That was what motivated her worship. And that's what needs to motivate our worship. We look back at the cross in hindsight now. But as we look at the cross, as we understand the significance of what took place there upon the cross, as we understand that when Jesus died on that cross, he was dying for you and for me. He was dying in our place as a substitute for our sin. And as a result of that, and appreciating that, understanding the significance of that at a personal level, we give ourselves heart and soul and mind and strength to him. That's the priority in our worship. As we think about these two sisters this morning, of course, in so many ways, they were different. They had different personalities. They had different spiritual gifts. But, you know, they were both equally precious to Jesus. I think Martha teaches us not to neglect our time with the Lord. It doesn't matter how busy we are. Our busyness must never become a substitute or an excuse for our spending time with him. And I think Mary teaches us to love the Lord more than anything else that we may value in life. How we express our love for Christ is going to vary from person to person, from situation to situation. But friends, I hope this morning, as we think about Mary, that we can be encouraged to look for opportunities to be able to express how much we really love the Lord. And to be sincere and to be extravagant and to be generous in the way that we go about doing that. That's the kind of worship that touched Jesus' heart that day as Mary poured out her perfume on his body. And I pray that the Lord will give us opportunities to be able to pour out our love on him and to touch his heart the way that Mary did. Let's pray.